I'm just going to introduce you to a multi-award-winning filmmaker, director and producer, Simon J. Frith. Good morning.
Good morning, Michelle.
Thank you very much for coming in. Now, he was here early, you see, so we had a chat off air and discovered we knew a few. It's a very small world.
It is.
Lucky I didn't say anything bad about those people. Well. Before we talk about your latest work, who inspired you to take up filmmaking? Was this something you did from when you were very young?
Well, I guess I often get asked this, actually, and... But it's an easy answer because I was at school at the time and I was in my last couple of years of being at school. Like many people, didn't know what I wanted to do, really. And I'd been given a book of career possibilities by the careers tutor and I was doing maths A-level, which doesn't sound very filmic, really, I suppose. And in that book, there was a suggestion of one thing that you could link with maths was accountancy.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, don't really fancy that totally. But looking down the list of things you could specialise in, one of them was accountancy for films. And I thought, well, actually, that does sound interesting. And then after a short thought, I thought, well, actually, let's just bin the accountancy and let's just do the film work. And from that moment on, I guess I was about 17, started to suddenly pick up from having no experience of filmmaking, got a camera and just started to build it from there. And so that's obviously quite late compared to people today picking up a camera for the first time, but it can be done.
It would have been different because if we're talking about 20 years ago, it wouldn't have had. Nowadays, people have got, you know, access on their phones to things. So how did you actually get the funding together to get yourself a camera at the time?
I asked my parents for a Super 8 camera. So it was film in those days. And Super 8 camera, got a second-hand Super 8 camera, and I just spent all of my hard-earned cash and paper rounds and things on film stock and went out and did these things. They were dreadful films, really, looking back at them now, but they start to teach you the hard way of doing things. And when you do things on film, it's a lot... it teaches you good disciplines because it costs so much money to put the film through the camera. It's not like picking up a mobile phone today and just filming everything that moves. You have to be quite disciplined in terms of what you film. And I can't say that I sort of got it right first time, but you end up learning the hard way, if you like.
Is your personality in your films?
I think it sort of has developed over the years. I mean, back in when I first started up, I was a big fan of Steven Spielberg films, big blockbuster things.
Yeah.
And the way I used to sort of create my films then was to look at scenes from those films and then almost recreate them for my own projects, shot for shot. So there's a scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark that... where Harrison Ford whips the gun from someone's hand.
Yeah.
And I sort of thought I could use that scene in my own film here and replicated that. And I was amazed how easily it worked. And
there's a legend that was meant to be a big fight.
Well, it's interesting, actually, because I was talking with the producer of Star Wars and also Indiana Jones through the new project I'm working on just a few months ago. And he told me a story of how that all came about, and it was... The shots weren't working. It was in Raiders of the Lost Ark, and they were running out of time on the set. And just over lunch, the producers were having a chat with Steven Spielberg, and they sort of said, well, this isn't working. We're going to run out of money. And Steven was saying, no, look, we've got to do it tomorrow. It's not working out. And then somebody suggested, why don't we just get him, Harrison to pull the gun out and shoot the baddie? And that's what he did, and it's one of those iconic moments just over a conversation at lunch.
Yes.
So, excellent.
Yes. Now, the Mike Edmonds story is a documentary. You've had the privilege of interviewing some amazing movie and television stars. So tell us about Mike Edmonds and why you decided to do the documentary.
Well, I've known Mike now for, 20 years. And we finished a number of projects over the last few years. And we were sort of thinking, well, where are we going to go next? And we sort of brainstormed, myself and a few colleagues, the sort of things that we might want to do. And... because I'm a friend of Mike on Facebook, I'd been seeing over the last 12 months or so stories of how he finds it difficult now getting around because he, as a little person, he does suffers from a chondroplasia, which gives him severe spine difficulties and has lots of difficulties walking. I think it was about 12 months ago he was going in for an operation, and he's going in for his fourth one next month. And it just seemed to me that this was a story that needed to be told, really, not just the story of somebody who's got a condition, a disability, if you like, that makes it hard to get around and do normal things, but someone who's been in so many fabulous films, so many blockbuster films, from Star Wars yep. type films mm-hmm. through to television programmes and stage shows, and it just sort of begged to be told.
Now, we've got Return of the Jedi, Time Bandits, The yeah. Dark Crystal, also yeah. Who Framed Roger Rabbit, yeah. I can't say that properly. That's just a few of the films that he's been in, yeah. and I remember him from watching films, and I couldn't believe, I don't want to say his age, but I thought he was still only in his 40s. He's a little bit oh. old. You're a little bit older than that, Mike, if you're listening.
He will but like
I,
that.
But I didn't realise, because time goes so quick. Yes. People are tracked, aren't they, in time once yes. they're filmed, and it's yes. that's how you remember people yes. as well.
It does, but I think that the story there is an amazing one, because Mike came to acting quite late in life. I think he was about 35 yeah. When he first made the move from working as an electrical engineer in Southend to suddenly going for an interview for an audition for a film with Ken Loach mm. in 1979, and he got the job, and then he's turned career and never looked back. And I think that's quite inspirational, really, to people out there that think that they get to 25 and that's it. They've finished yes. and whatever career yes. choices they've made. So yes. if you are 25 and you're listening, you've got another 10 years and you can still make the change. Yes.
After that, though, you're finished. You're still there, Simon.
I am still here, yes, indeed, yeah.
They're trying to get out the window. You won't escape from here. Now, the Mike Edmonds story, the documentary you were talking about just before we went to the travel there, you've interviewed some amazing movie and television stars for this as well.
Absolutely. And it's all down to Mike, really, because these are all people that he's worked with and who speak very fondly of him. In fact, you think, well, OK, if this is a guy who's worked in these things with these famous people, they may not even remember him, but they do. And they're so quick to line up and say, yes, please get me in the programme. Yeah. And again, that's a testament of Mike as a person, just not just of his acting ability, but also of his personality and demeanour, really. It's just the type of guy that you like to know. With documentaries as opposed to drama programmes, they're a little bit more flexible in terms of how you put these things together. With a drama, you've got a script and you can then storyboard precisely what you're after.
Yeah.
And in many respects, they're easier to do. With a documentary, we initially started just thinking this was going to be a short film, something that we could just slot in between other projects. And but then when we started to talk to Mike and realised the breadth of information and the detail, we felt that we couldn't really, it wouldn't be doing the Mike's story justice to make this a short film. So it's turned into a feature-length film. And it doesn't feel long, and although it's still in post-production, it doesn't feel long because of the sort of the warmth coming through it.
And is it just you, or do you have a team of people? Do you have to do the filming, the editing, and all of the questions you're going to ask? Is it all just down to yourself?
No. I mean, I have done things on my own in the past, but I think this is so much the greater by having a lot of collaborators involved. There's most of those are also Essex-based people as well. So it's great when you've got people who are close in your proximity that to who you can work with as well. And one of our producers is also a great illustrator, Grant Philpott, who lives in Lee. He's worked on Harry Hill's TV Burp in the past. And it's just useful to be able to sort of say, okay, this is where we're taking this project, where do we want to go, and then the more minds thinking behind the scenes, the better it gets at the end.
Is it similar to the way that you would do maybe an album? You might do a couple of tracks, and then you have to sort of walk away and then go back into the studio and look at them all, you know, listen again, and then make your edits and stuff from there?
Indeed. We started off by interviewing Mike, and we interviewed him in his kitchen, and we filmed, and we got all these little anecdotes coming out, and then you get little sort of stories, and you think, well, how's that going to work? And then we sort of, by chance and by perseverance, managed to get a few extra contributors. So we started with Boba Fett, or Jeremy Bullock, he's given his real name, from Star Wars. We got some interviews done with him. Terry Gilliam was a wonderful person to interview. We went to his house, and it was a fabulous treasure trove. If anyone has seen any of Terry's films, it's just walking into an Aladdin's den, really, of memorabilia.
Did you manage to take anything with you?
No, unfortunately not.
It's the way you were saying it. I was like, I went to his house, there was loads of stuff, so naturally
he was watching
every
out. But he was a lovely person. I think sometimes you get people who are, they're sort of, they give you a television face, if you like, and it's all lovely, and then you see them in reality off the cameras, and they're not
so
the same.
So different.
But all the people we've interviewed for this project have been wonderful, friendly, happy people that you'd love to know.
Yeah.
What about all those super people? I saw Mike in a play at Southend called There's No Place Like a Home.
That play is part of Mike's story. I think people will have known him for playing one of the Ewoks in Return of the Jedi and for being Og in Time Bandits, which is probably one of his bigger film roles, where he's got a big featured role. But his stage work isn't necessarily as well known. I think when you are a little person, people tend to think, well, he's in panto, he's doing Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs or something stereotypical.
So much more. Yes.
But he spent 2 years touring with the Royal Shakespeare Company, and which obviously sets him apart, if you like, from a lot of people. And the stage show No Place Like a Home, which was Paul Elliott we've interviewed for the film, and again great accolades coming from Paul. There's still a few people we're hanging out for, so whilst we're into the post-production stage, we're currently talking with Colin Firth's people at the moment, and we're hopeful that in the new year we might be able to grab him, because he's currently filming Bridget Jones' Diary 3.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yes, I'd like to grab Colin Firth as well.
I'll come and make the tea. Could I make the tea?
No, don't let her anywhere near Colin Firth. Now, Star Wars and Indiana Jones, they are my favourite. I love those films. They just remind me of my childhood, and they were fabulous and lovely. Robert Watts, you did mention him earlier. What was he like?
Robert Watts was fabulous. I mean, a lot of these people are a lot older than you almost remember them being. Robert was a producer of Indiana Jones, which Mike wasn't in, but he was also a producer of Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. And it's, I think, when Robert first encountered Mike on Empire Strikes Back, he realised that this wasn't just a person that was your average actor. He actually was talented, he was friendly, and he was a good person to be around. And the friendship has remained until this day. And meeting him again at his home was wonderful.
Yes. Did he have lots of memorabilia laying around?
No, and that's what's been shocking about most of these people. None of them, no one seems to at least have it on display, apart from Terry. But I think it has been just great. The stories they come up with are wonderful. And, of course, we've got a lot of those stories in our film as well. So it's a combination of anecdotes about the various films that Mike's worked on, which are all iconic films, but also we're sort of telling people about achondroplasia, about what the condition's like to live with, and what it's like, if you like, to be a little person living in a house meant for people of a taller size. Mike's early life as well, from when he was born right the way through to the current day. So we're covering the whole works. We went back to his school in Billericay to film there, although it's now no longer a school. It's the primary school, at least, is now sort of a pub or bar. I think.
Oh, that sounds great.
We've all been there as well.
I think it just extended out of the staff room, actually. I think it started off as a bar in the staff room and then expanded it.
Now we are